David Haakonson is the Minnesota author of a one-of-a-kind new book. It's a biography of nature writer Helen Hoover. Helen and her husband moved from Chicago in 1954 to the remote wilderness of the Gunflint Trail in northeastern Minnesota, which became the inspiration for her popular nature books, which include The Gift of the Deer, A Place in the Woods, and The Years of the Forest. David's book highlights Helen's talent, intellect, and unique character. Here's David Haakonson on his new book, Her Place in the Woods, The Life of Helen Hoover.
Helen Hoover was a nature writer that lived on Gunflint Lake from in the 1950s, 60s, and just for a brief time in the 70s. She wrote four books about living on Gunflint Lake and the nature around her cabin, and wrote three books for children, and also was a magazine columnist for Humpty Dumpty's Children's Magazine and for Defenders of Wildlife Magazine.
And when did you first learn about her writing? I'm curious to know if you grew up reading some of her books, or was this a later in life discovery?
Well, I heard that she was kind of quote unquote a best-selling author in the 1960s, and she was a contemporary of Calvin Redstrom and Sigurd Olsen, who both wrote at that time and wrote popular books about those two, primarily about paddling in the boundary waters and in the wilderness. But at the same time, she was writing about nature as well. And somebody gave me a copy of her book, A Place in the Woods, which is her third book. And it's somewhat autobiographical about she and her husband leaving Chicago, moving up to the Gunflint Trail to their cabin full time, not having lived there or spent any winters up there, and moving into a cabin that had no running water and no electricity. So they really took the plunge and moved up there. The book intrigued me because it was well written. It was a very interesting story. All the anecdotes about the challenges they had, about trying to get along with their neighbors being from an urban city, and some of those things. So I read the rest of her books, you know, and became interested and figured there must be a biography about her somewhere because she was a very interesting woman. But I didn't find one. So I got interested in it that way.
Like you mentioned, Helen and her husband, Aide, their first winter at this cabin on Gunflint Lake was fascinating. It was fascinating to read about that in your book. You said they didn't have running water. They didn't have electricity. What I thought was also very interesting is that they were not hunters. They were not interested in killing wildlife for food, you know, to have fresh meat throughout the winter. Can you kind of encapsulate what that first winter was like for them to give people a taste of that from your book?
Beside the fact that they didn't really know what they were getting into and bought a lot of things like winter clothing and sorts of things from catalogs, even back then, L.L. Bean and Eddie Bauer, and then from stores in Grand Marais, their first winter was complicated by the fact that they had a car accident about a month and a half after moving there that totaled their car. So then they had no way to get to and from Grand Marais, and they'd have to rely on, you know, neighbors and friends to get them things, although they really didn't, because they were somewhat loners and didn't know a lot of people. They had moved there permanently in the fall, so a lot of the seasonal people were gone. And, you know, a few resort owners and a few people who wintered over helped them out. But they were really, you know, like many children of the Depression, they were people that, you know, wanted to fend for themselves, and they tried to do that. And it was difficult because they didn't really know about food preparation for, you know, the fact that, you know, they couldn't put anything outside because it would freeze. The cabin was cold a fair amount of the time. One of the things that Helen said in one of her books, and I validated it in correspondence to some of her agent and publisher, was that she, you know, people up there, the locals, actually placed bets thinking that these two people from Chicago were not going to make it for the winter. And some people were frankly surprised that they did. You know, one of the people I talked to, one of the resort owners up there that's mentioned in the book, and one of that resort owner's daughter, who owned the resort after them, told me, you know, confirmed for me that people were seriously worried about them dying of hypothermia because of the way they couldn't keep the cabin warm enough in the really, really cold months of winter.
Eventually, Helen gets to she begins writing. She gets a lot of articles published, and that leads eventually to her books. What was really also very interesting is that the idea that Helen and Aide thought they had found this peaceful space in isolation up in the Northwoods. But when Helen's books became popular, people actually started seeking them out and making pilgrimages to their cabin uninvited. That's got to be really strange for people who had wanted to like have this peaceful space. I wonder if you can speak to like her fame. Like how did they react to that?
Well, that's interesting. I think when Helen wrote her first book, she was happy that she had fans, like anybody would. But then all of a sudden, they started showing up, like you said, and they showed up uninvited. And this is also true of some friends that they had in Chicago. She had some old work colleagues that just dropped in on them, and she made a comment in a letter to a friend that said, "I would never think of just dropping in on somebody in Chicago. Why do they think they can do that here?" And so they had that challenge early on, but then it became the fan mail or the fans, and as you said, people making pilgrimages, and people would get as far as Grand Marais, and they'd say, "We're looking for that woman writer," and they'd say, "Well, go up the Gunflint Trail and ask at one of the resorts," and then the Gunflint Lodge would send them down the street, or down the road to their place. And, Helen, one of the things is that she, because of this high IQ she had, she would organize her books in her mind and then just sort of write straight through, and it would just kind of come out. And so she really required a lot of concentration skills. And these interruptions really proved difficult for her because they would upset all of her train of thought, and she'd really get quite irritated about it. So Aide came to the point where he would literally be barring the door and trying to intercept people before they ever knocked on the door and interrupted Helen. And to a certain degree, somebody told me that I met while I've been talking about my book that knew the Hoovers, that even close friends of hers had to schedule a time when they would go visit her because they didn't want to get her tripped up on her writing. And that was always a challenge, is interrupting the Hoovers.
This is What We're Reading, and we're hearing from Minnesota writer David Hakenson on his new book, Her Place in the Woods: The Life of Helen Hoover. You include in your book an excerpt of a letter Helen wrote to a friend where she laments how the Northland was changing, that people do not want the wild beauty that they think they want. They want to bring all this like manner of modern comforts in with them. Which is kind of a juxtaposition with what the wild is. And this was from the 1960s, but it still feels like this is a battle we're seeing today, is people trying to really modernize the wild. Which brings up the point of like, how much of an effect did Helen have in piquing people's interest to move up to the Northwoods or vacation up here?
Well, I think that's the catch-22 of what she did. As much as she lamented that development, she encouraged it to a certain extent by demonstrating that she and her husband could go sort of back to the land, which is good. I mean, that part of it is, if you actually are going to move back and embrace living wildly, that would be okay. But most people don't do that today. And I think her books are sort of a cautionary tale about, what could happen if we get overdeveloped. And if you look at it, very early on, Aide said to Helen, he said, "Let's buy this cabin while we can, because we know it won't last." And he was right in that. They got about 18, 20 years out of it before it really changed. And there was competing interests. At the time the Hoovers bought the cabin, Gunflint Trail is getting expanded. The resorts are pushing the local electric co-op to run electricity up the trail so that they didn't have to rely on generators for their power. Because people remember going to resorts in the 1950s. You had these generators running all day long, and then they turned them off at night, and you didn't have any lights or anything. So that was another important thing. Telephone wires were run up there so they could have more telephone lines, and then it just, the roads kept getting more and more improved, and that just, I think what finally broke it for the Hoovers is the land that they had to the east of them had been owned by somebody, and it was just raw land, and they sold it, and the owners decided to put in a cabin right on the border to the Hoover cabin. And So there was a road going all the way in, and Helen's trying to write her third book while tractors are knocking trees over and turning everything in the ground up. And that was kind of the last straw, and they decided to move to New Mexico.
So, David, is this your very first book that you've written?
This is my first book, yes.
Okay. Do you have a writing background? Do you want to talk about how you got into this project and the research and all that work involved with it?
Yes, when I said earlier that I was interested in whether a biography had been written, I did find somebody who had written a short master's thesis about Helen that was on file at the Minnesota Historical Society, and that paper was obviously had notes to it, and all of that indicated that Helen's papers had been donated to the University of Minnesota Duluth. So it was very easy for me to go up there and find all of her correspondence, contracts, draft manuscripts, completed manuscripts, and a lot of other ephemera about her family and where she grew up and in Ohio and things like that. So that was very helpful. What I did write an article for Minnesota History Magazine that ran in 2014, and that was sort of the beginning of trying to go deeper. But my background is mostly in corporate communication, so I've done that kind of writing, which is more like news style writing, like you write in journalism, writing in the third person. And I had to switch my whole thinking to write a nonfiction book because it's a different style of writing. But close enough that it wasn't difficult. But biography is fun. I mean, you can go into a lot of details, and it's linear. I mean, there's somebody's born, somebody lives life, somebody dies. So it's easy from an organizational standpoint. But I also think that what I hope I brought to the biography is, if you know Helen's work and you want to know a little bit more about her, that's great. But she also had this incredible career beforehand in metallurgy, where she received a couple of patents for her work and became very successful, and then walked away from that to go live in the woods.
David Hakenson is the author of Her Place in the Woods, The Life of Helen Hoover, and this book has recently been named a Minnesota Book Award finalist. It's what we're reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.